Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Hey guys, so on this episode of The Heat Check, David and I talk about Hassan Whiteside, Hassanity, as they say, and his crazy 12-block game, 5 blocks in 7 minutes, blocked Taj Gibson 5 times in the face. We talk about Dwayne Wade getting snubbed from the All-Star team and what Justin Bieber had to do with it. And while we're recording the podcast, we get news that Norris Cole could get traded to the Charlotte Hornets. Kemba Walker got hurt and could be out for almost 8 weeks, so apparently the Hornets are looking for a point guard with starting experience. So we talk about that and wheel and deal a little bit, play a little bit more GM, and talk about some possible trade scenarios. So listen throughout for that. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to The Heat Check on iTunes and review us and rate us, and enjoy the podcast.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. Whoa, dunk! Forney blocked the dunk!
Here's Wade against Green.
Euroskip.
Welcome to The Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
I'm doing pretty good. Just looking to improve my NBA 2K rating, that's all.
I'd say you're. I think you're improving it every podcast. You're getting better every game.
I think so, too, man.
So, Hassan Whiteside, apparently his 2K rating is now a 77. He went from like a 59, a 57 to a 79 or something, or he's good, like in 2K now.
Is that the biggest single season jump in the 2K history?
Probably, right? I mean, what did, that's a good question. I bet you Jeremy Lin had a nice little jump there too.
Oh God. It's funny though, you know, I know that we're going to talk about Whiteside and everything else and his actual impact in the game. But one of the things that I love seeing about this player is thinking about anybody in NBA history, maybe even recent history, if you want to just look at it that way, having such a huge impact completely out of nowhere. And Jeremy Lin is the obvious comparison, but I think that was more of a result of just injuries kind of opening a door for him, mm-hmm. and he did fairly well. But obviously, it's not sustainable. And he didn't sustain it even in that season in the short term. How would you rate like Whiteside's performance? And can you think of any other player just completely coming from out of nowhere and having the same kind of impact as Whiteside?
Well, I love that we always compare it to Lin, but you think about what Jeremy Lin was doing. Yeah, he was scoring, 17, 20 points a game. It was something in that ballpark, right? But it was for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. And then, a lot of what was getting him so much hype in the SportsCenter clips where he's hitting like just a ridiculous amount of game winners. Like every time the Knicks were playing, it was a close game, and he just hit like 2 or 3 game winners within like a 2 week span or something. And everybody was just like, oh my God, like this guy's so clutch and he's scoring and all this stuff. It looks like Hassan Whiteside, he's not hitting the game winners. He's got some nice dunks, but nothing like, you know, he's not going out there like Zach LaVine or something or Paul George with his 360 windmill or something. He's just being good at basketball, and nobody knew that he was. And I can't think of anybody that has just come onto the scene and has just been like a really solid. I don't want to use the word solid for him because I feel like sometimes that could be like not a good thing, you know. But like almost like a game managing quarterback, but. He's just like all around, like he's impactful on defense.
Yeah.
He's running the pick and roll offense. He is hitting sweeping hooks and a few jumpers every once in a while, but nothing too crazy. Like he's in his comfort zone. He's just being good at basketball. And the thing is, like, you look at what, and I think it is sustainable. I don't know if the pick and roll death machine thing that he is gonna be like at some point you're gonna have defense is key in on that, right? But I thought this Bulls game would have been that time where the defense, like, because Joakim Noah is so good at cutting off that pick and roll, but it didn't really. And then all of a sudden, you know, he had 14 points, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like he went out and scored 20 something points, like we'd seen him do a couple times before, but like he did in that Clippers game. And I think we're talking about after that Clippers game. Okay, what happens when he can't score at will,
right,
like he was?
Right.
And can he impact the game? Yeah, he can. He can get 5 blocks in 7 minutes. Damn it! Like, oh my God, this guy's he goes and gets a triple double. You know, he didn't score 26 points, but he had a 14, 12, and 10 or something, or 14, 13, 12.
There was one play in particular that kind of really stood out as far as Whiteside and his scoring impact. It was Luol Deng. I think he took a ill-advised layup there. He was actually being double-teamed at the time, but he got it close enough. He drew the defenders away from the rim as he was kind of sailing past it,
mm-hmm.
you know, with his layup that kind of, I think it missed the rim altogether, or just as it caromed off, there was Whiteside to corral the rebound and flush it through for the dunk. And that was like a quality miss, you know what I'm saying? And that's something that you didn't have over the last few years. Maybe you had that in 2013 with Anderson when he first came on board, you know, a guy who can finish at the rim, but he's making an overall impact. To go back to that Jeremy Lin thing too, you can't overstate or understate how important it was for him to be playing in a huge media market like New York, where they're so thirsty for any kind of major news that they'll blow it up as much as possible.
And a name position like point guard, and, you know, not to be out of bounds here, but an Asian point guard,
right,
in a predominantly black league where,
yeah,
and something, yeah, and that huge Asian market really propelled him, especially in New York, you have a lot of Asians there, really propelled him. And it was something that the league was missing. The league claims to be huge in Asia, and I believe that. But when Yao Ming left, it was like, okay, who's the Asian that's gonna keep the NBA relevant in that part of the world? And he was very important in a cultural aspect. I don't know if Hassan Whiteside, if to anybody other than 2K heads, or if he has like a cultural impact. You know,
yeah,
this is just strictly basketball.
Yeah, that's a good point. But he's just really changed the dynamic. I think, you know, when he got hurt, you saw all of a sudden that they weren't as capable a team. They lost those two games where he was out. I mean, one against the Thunder, that was kind of predictable. But the Charlotte game, that was, I think with him there, obviously, I mean, Charlotte was just a really bad game overall, a very ineffective one. Obviously, with him in the lineup, had he been able to play, we probably would have pulled out a victory. Oh, I just want to go on record as confirming the fact that I did predict admirably the open face sandwich. You said that we were going to have the two wins in the middle of this 4-game stretch from last week, but I actually went on record during last week's podcast of saying that we'd win against the last two teams, including, you know, was it, I'm forgetting, who did we beat before Chicago? We beat Chicago on Sunday. And
oh, in Indiana.
Indiana. On Friday,
Indiana.
That's right.
Yeah.
Indiana on Friday. So, anyway, just want to go on record as stating that yet again,
David strikes again. Nope, that's how. Oh, I think you just got 2 points in your 2K rating.
That's my first accurate prediction of the season, so I just wanted to.
Yeah, your prediction rating's going up through the roof. So, can we start saying, like, if you're a 50 something no name player? I have 2K15. I don't know if Hassan Whiteside's even in the game. I might be wrong on that. But in the original rosters, I don't even know if he's in the game.
I wouldn't say why. I mean, he wasn't there during. I mean, he was,
right. I mean, this is the original roster. Kevin Love is still on the Timberwolves too. But
gotcha.
Yeah, that's why I looked at that and I was like, damn it! Like, I have to do so much work now, and it took. I sat there for like 2 hours, and then I realized, oh, I could have just downloaded the rosters. After I sat there for 2 hours and fixed all 30 teams. Anyway.
Nice.
That's how I spend my time. So
big statistic there. Sorry to bring this up again, but I'm looking at it right now. Hassan Whiteside teams are now shooting 40% at the rim.
Unbelievable. What does that compare with Anthony Davis?
I don't
Not to
know.
Put you on the spot, like.
No, I don't know. It's actually just a tweet from the Heat.
Oh.
Cooper Moorhead. And it says he brings him into a tie with Ibaka, which is, you know, one of those people that generally are considered one of the top defenders in the league. Still second in the league to Rudy Gobert, who's 370. So
Taj Gibson is like a whopping 0% at the rim. He blocked him 5 times.
Yeah, you have to wonder what they were thinking there. And I know he frustration. Clearly, he thought that he was going to get a foul call, even though there was no, you know, contact other than what he initiated. And that's like, I mean, finally, the verticality rule, although he didn't even have to leave his feet. You know, he just had his hands straight up in the air, and Gibson would just kind of fly into Whiteside's chest because he couldn't really elevate too much past, you know, Whiteside. And he would put up this ill-advised shot, and it would get blocked, and then he's looking around like, where's the foul call? Where's the foul call? It's like, dude, you know, he didn't move at all. I don't know what you're looking for here. And for him to keep going there, I don't know if he was just trying to get himself going or hoping that they, you know, the refs would finally realize, oh, wait a minute, there's some contact. Let's get the foul call to Gibson. But, you know, I don't have any explanation for why he would continue to try Whiteside after getting rejected so repeatedly.
I went through phases. I was like, yeah, on that first one. I was like, yeah, that's great. We got a white second one. Yeah. Third one. Okay. Fourth one, seriously, I'm starting to feel bad for Taj Gibson right about now. And then the fifth one, I was like, dude, all right, this is all you. Like, fool me once, twice, three times, four times. Like, Jesus, dude, just stop. Just hit. Like, I know you're not really good at jump shooting, but just either do that or just give the ball away. At some point, this is not working. And then he starts blocking Pau Gasol in the fourth quarter, and then you're like, well, I guess it didn't really matter who had the ball.
Right.
The guys, I mean, and what I really liked was listening to Hubie Brown talk about Whiteside. I thought that was terrific. And he pointed out this great something I hadn't noticed, that he really does just come from either side of the paint, and he comes from, he'll take 2-3 bounding steps super quick. Like, Whiteside's quick. Like, he's a big goofy 7-footer, but he's fast. Like, he closes in quickly, and multiple times he was coming from the opposite side of the key to block shots, and there's this one play where he's pretty much near the foul line, and I think it was Aaron Brooks. It wasn't the one that he broke. Yeah, it wasn't the one he blocked him on the fast break, but the other one he blocked Aaron Brooks on.
It's funny they were talking about multiple blocks.
Right, exactly. Well, yeah, he didn't block him five times. He just blocked him twice. But, yeah, and he just goes from the foul line on the, like, diagonal ways, like, on the other side of the key, and within two steps is blocking Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks is, like, a small, quick guy, fast guy. Yeah. Who should be able to get that shot up pretty easily, and he just basically comes out of nowhere and just stuffs it. And of course, we're looking at Hubie Brown, and something we already knew and have pointed out on this podcast, that he will keep it in bounds when he blocks it. He blocks it like volleyball, just down, and
right.
And that just launches them on fast breaks. And of course, you're sitting there thinking like, oh my gosh, this is such great, it's so great for transition offense, and what could they have done with LeBron James? And you just know LeBron and Wade. And I think somebody tweeted out, like, Wade kind of wistfully was talking about what it would have been like to have a guy like Whiteside the last 4 years. I mean, this team would have won 70 games, you know. It's just,
yeah,
it's unbelievable. But, you know, not to harp on that, but it was nice to listen to...
He did talk about the fact that it's been an area of weakness over the last few years.
Yeah.
Which is something, like, the Heat had never really spoken about. They always had been very supportive of whoever was in the pivot, whether it was, you know, Chris Anderson or, you know, Bosch, obviously. They never looked at the center position as an area of weakness, at least not publicly. And for them to finally acknowledge that after a few years, you know, as much as we would have loved for, I'm drawing a blank now. What's the name of the center that we had?
Joel Anthony?
Oh, not Joel Anthony.
Are we talking about recently?
The young kid that we drafted out of Texas.
Dexter
Pittman. How could I forget Dexter?
How could you, man? He played for us for a little while.
Yeah, he's a title holder, right? He's got a ring.
Yeah, he won 2012. Man. Oh wait, no, didn't we waive him right before or something?
No, I think he got his ring. I think he got his.
Okay.
Ring.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Well, my concern with Whiteside was when teams start pulling him out, can he still be effective? And he was. And he's just blocked shots. And when you have a game like that, when you start getting a reputation as a shot blocker, then you start getting those verticality rules, right? Like, Roy Hibbert got that. Like, he won't even go vertical, and they'll still say, oh, he was vertical. It's fine.
How soon before players start, you know, not even maybe driving into the lane because they know he's in there? You know, is he going to get that kind of effect of a reputation where all of a sudden you realize, you know, Miami actually has a legitimate shot blocker, something they haven't had in such a long time. Yeah. maybe you won't even go into the paint as much, you know, forcing opponents more to the mid-range game, or maybe even out into the perimeter. You know, they'll put up ill-advised kind of awkward shots because they're scared that, you know, Whiteside is going to block him because he's been so effective at it. I mean, it's going to have a positive impact in the short term and long term for this team.
Yeah, and the NBA, you know, is kind of slow to catch on to these things. There's not a lot of practice time. So when you're watching film, you're really just kind of focusing on what you as a team are doing. So, you know, you're watching a little bit of film, but when Whiteside starts doing this kind of stuff on a national stage, which he's done a couple of times now, coaches notice, you know, and I don't know. It's hard to say because we're also in this era of you have to either drive to the rim or take three-point shots, right? You don't want to take those mid-range shots, but but that makes the shot blocking so much more important because now the Heat, and they're doing this now, they can start running guys off the three-point line where before they were terrified to even do that. It's like, okay, well, we could run him off the three-point line and then he could just score at the basket. But now they can't do that. So now you're forcing them into that zone where maybe they have to start taking mid-range shots. And we've seen the Heat's defense has been really good lately. Like, when was the last time somebody scored 100 points? I'm going to look that up right now. I mean, they've been very good, and it's kind of, for how many problems we had on defense this season, it's kind of gone we're not really talking about how much better this defense has just been overall, and I think a lot of it has to do with Whiteside, but also just the combination of Whiteside and Chris Anderson. We need to give Chris Anderson some credit because now he's able to just play 15 minutes a game. I think Whiteside's going to get the starting job as soon as he's back and being healthy again. And I think we saw he was.
Golden State scored 104.
Oh, well, other than them. But, like, holding the Golden State to 104 is like them scoring 84.
Yeah, good point. And Houston, but I don't know. How much did he play during that game, to be honest with you? I can't recall.
That Houston game was in the beginning of the month, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was it. Yeah, you're right. So, 200-point games. That's
in January.
That's not bad. And let's look how much he played in that Houston game.
20 minutes, wound up with 2 blocks in just 20 minutes. I mean, it was a pretty poor game overall. Obviously, mm-hmm. Anderson got to start.
Right.
And they were torching us for a good portion of time. That was really a good breakout game, though. He had 14 points. That was when we started going, maybe this kid actually has some upside and is a legitimate player.
In that Houston game, they were hitting almost everything. Yeah. 3-point wise, you know, even if it was contested, that had nothing to do with Whiteside, you know. But
they shot 42% from 3-point, like 13 of 31. So I mean,
it was insane.
We conversely shot 23.5%, 4 of 17. So that was just ridiculous.
So, yeah, I think so. To kind of wheel back around to the original question, when was the last time we've seen somebody just completely come on and actually be an important player to a playoff contender? I don't even know. I can't even think of, like, Jeremy Lin is the closest thing we have, but I don't even know if that's completely comparable, like we already talked about. I don't know when a player just kind of, and he left that year. He was gone after.
And
there's no way that's a contractual thing, too, and they didn't want to pay him, and, you know, it looks like the Heat are going to keep Whiteside, but.
Well, I talked about it, and you know, a friend of mine brought it up. It kind of reminds everybody of Ike Austin a little bit. I think that's probably a little bit before your time as far as following the Heat is concerned. But he was a backup center in Alonzo Mourning's second year here in Miami that kind of played himself out of the league, and that he was drafted by Utah. I can't remember out of what school. He was kind of lazy, a little overweight, had an attitude problem. Kind of like Whiteside. Spent 2 years in the league, but he was eventually not signed, or I think he was waived outright by Utah. Wound up playing overseas in Turkey, Macedonia, other places, and then lost a bunch of weight, and Riley kind of coached him up and said, look, you know, this is where we had seen from Riley kind of what he had done with the Knicks, and that he's able to take an undervalued player and really bring something out of the way he did with Udonis Haslam in 2003, etc. So this guy, Ike Austin, he really got into incredible shape, and then Alonzo wound up getting hurt that year, and all of a sudden Ike Austin starts in his place, and Miami doesn't lose a beat. You know, they don't miss a beat at all. Still a very consistent team. I think they went on to win 61 games that year, so it was a really great team, and he was a big part of that. And then the following year, it was his contract year, kind of like Whiteside's next season. And I guess the Heat thought he was going to try and demand too much. And he was traded to the Los Angeles Clippers for Brent Barry. And we had Brent Barry for half a season. We traded Austin to the Clippers for half a season. He re-signed with them for a bunch of money, and he was just never the same. He was absolutely – he got his money. He cashed them checks, as they say, and he never turned out to be a decent player. Like, he'd have moments here and there, but he put the weight – not all the weight. He didn't put it all back on, but he just – he got injured, and he was lazy, and he just never had to play for anything after he got that big contract. So, you know, part of what I saw Chris Bosh mention to reporters about Whiteside is that he wants to make sure he keeps him grounded. And you kind of get that sense from him. I don't want to be, you know, knock on wood and everything else. I don't want to be kind of a naysayer talking about the fly in the soup or anything. But you kind of get a feeling from Whiteside that he has that chip on his shoulder and things could go really south very quickly, right? Because, I mean, that was a knock on him when he was first drafted, that he was a kind of problematic player. He had an attitude problem, thought very highly of himself, even as no one else did. And you kind of get the feeling now that he's actually able to back it up and he's thriving, at least publicly, you know, to reporters, he's talking about how appreciative he is of the Heat organization and how much he means the organization means to him because they gave him a shot when nobody else would. You'd like that to be the case forever, you know, for perpetuity. But, you know, next year, you're going to see a player who wants to get that money, to get that big contract, because this might be his last best chance to do so. So you have to wonder, and yeah, I know we don't want to look too far ahead, and I don't want to say that this is a guy who's going to, you know, become an instant jerk or anything like that, but he's going to want to get that money, right? And so you have to wonder whether or not it's going to be a similar situation to what I was just talking about.
And we see guys even as recently as Larry Sanders. I mean, he was a draft pick. He was in the league, but he basically blew up from Milwaukee kind of out of – I guess his progression was 0 to 60. He was not very good, and then he was one of the better shot blockers in the league almost immediately. And he got his big contract, and now we see all the issues that he's having. So we've seen things like that before. You do wonder when he says things like, Doc didn't give me a chance, and I wanted to come here and show him up, and then I want to get my 2K rating up, which I think I'm glad that hasn't been taken out of context. At least I haven't seen it, because it was really tacked on. He said all the right things, and he tacked that on to the end of the interview as kind of a joke. And that was fine. And like, okay, he's got personality at least, you know, like, that's cool. But you also, like, with every joke, there's a little bit of truth to it, you know? So when his NBA 2K rating is up, and when teams are taught and people are saying how great this guy is in the media instead of not paying attention to him, then you got to make sure he doesn't get that big head. But we also see guys like Dwayne Wade, who has played on with a chip on his shoulder his entire career. And there's ways to handle that chip on your shoulder. There's ways to embrace it and use that energy for good. And then there's ways to just basically say, just knock the chip off your shoulder and just replace it with money bags and just say, I'm good.
Right.
And you hope that's not what the case is. But with the Heat, they're known for being a family organization and bringing guys in and getting them going. And we even saw it with Michael Beasley. Like, I thought with Beasley, it wasn't really an issue with his attitude, right? That last season. I think the first go-around, it was kind of weird, but this past year, when he was on the team, it wasn't like an attitude issue, and it wasn't like necessarily a buying in issue. It was just like he struggled with the defensive concepts, like really poorly. Like he was just really bad at it. And on offense, he's just, you can't make him what he isn't. He's a like what we were talking about last week, a wild horse. He's just gonna get his shots, and that's what he is, and that's his game. You can't just change a person's game. Right, we never really heard about attitude issues last season so much, and now he didn't really make it on the team. But I thought that was just because that was a second go around with that experiment. He is what he is. He's not right for what Spoelstra wants to do. But Hassan Whiteside is literally exactly what this team needed on both ends of the court. So that whole basketball thing, the X's and O's, what's great is we don't have to worry about that right now. It's like, okay, this guy's got a ton of talent. Can he reach it, and can he stay level-headed and dedicated to his craft? And I think if there's an organization in the NBA to help him do that, it's the Heat. And maybe I'm a Heat homer, but they're one of the best, like the Heat, the Spurs, those organizations, those are top notch. Those are the teams you want to play with. That's why Greg Oden was trying to get back in the NBA, it came down to the Spurs and the Heat. He realized, like, these are the organizations, these are the top notch, these are the ones that are going to give me a chance.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about Wade as the mentor, because I don't think he embraces that role. He said before that he's not the raw rock kind of guy, and that he's not a very vocal, emotional leader, etc. He kind of just does what he has to. I mean, it's what separates him as far as other guys that are much more emotional or vocal or whatever.
Yeah, I never looked at him that way.
Right? I mean, it was evident, like, with Beasley. He kind of, I don't think he ever took Beasley under his wing when he was first drafted by Miami. And maybe having a guy as uber talented as Wade and take kind of a knucklehead like Beasley, and maybe if he had grounded him and kind of instructed him a little bit better, mentored him a little bit better, maybe things would have been different.
Wade was also dealing with his knee thing, that whole, like, I feel like that was his whole focus, was just trying to stay healthy. That's asking a lot from one guy. Like, by the way, when you can walk, can you please mentor this jackass? Like, I don't know.
But is it, though? I mean, look, I'm not going to knock Dwayne Wade. He's done more than enough for this franchise, and I understand it. But you kind of, you know, part of the problem with being a fan of a team or a player or whatever is that you kind of want them to be superhuman. You want them to be great people on and off the court. And you have to sometimes accept the fact that they may not always live up to those unrealistic expectations. And so, I mean, I'm more than happy to admit that I'm asking too much for a person like that. But at the same time, I can also say, hope that you'd see Wade take Whiteside, or, the way that he didn't take Beasley in 2008, and say, look, young fella, I mean, we want you to be as good as you can. We do want you to get your money. But at the same time, you can't afford to be, you can't afford to just get your contract and fall apart. You have to stay dedicated. You have to, like you said, work on your craft. Every player, be it, Hassan Whiteside or Michael Jordan, could have always improved throughout the course of their NBA career. And so you just want to see that kind of mentorship coming from a player, because I think players, like most people, they listen more to their peers than what than the front office. It's great to have a guy like Pat Riley there, but, Pat Riley, hasn't coached, during the time that Hassan Whiteside has been an adult. So, you know what I'm saying? Like,
We don't know that Wade hasn't done that either. We're just both saying that he doesn't really strike us as the kind.
Right.
But what I do see from Wade, there's something to be said by a lead by example type thing. Like, he did take less money on his contract, right? He is very team oriented. He gets guys the ball on the court. He's very a willing passer, because he kind of reminds me of Kobe in the sense of the way he carries himself. Like, you kind of get that selfish, like, I need to still prove myself. I need to bite down and prove myself still, and I'm 30-something years old. You kind of get that from Kobe. It's kind of about them. But unlike Kobe, he's really good at facilitating. He's a great off-ball, still great at cutting to the basket and getting other guys involved and helping other guys. And unlike Kobe, also took less money. And we also don't know what really goes on behind closed doors, but Wade does strike me as the guy that really just, like, maybe not in a basketball standpoint mentors guys, but he befriends his teammates. You see him give him shout outs to his guys on Instagram and even guys he doesn't play with anymore. Like, you really get a sense that he tries to get along with the guys in the locker room, and maybe that's not so much the teacher, but maybe, there's something to be said that there's some mutual respect there, and I think that's kind of what his avenue is. And I understand, like, what you're saying, you're asking a lot, but yeah, maybe he should be more of a coach. But he did say this season, I think, I can't remember who wrote it, but was saying, like, he was asked to be a coach this season, like an assistant coach, and he got away from that a little bit, and he wanted to get back to doing that recently. So I think there is a recognition on the organization standpoint saying, like, can you do more of that? And they actually they told him, yeah, can you do more of that? So,
Speaking of former teammates, do you want to bring up the news about Norris Cole?
Yeah, he's been traded. The Miami Heat got a bag of organic apples. Yeah, organic. Really nice. Red Delicious. So that's nice. There's enough for the entire locker room. So everybody gets one apple.
Except for Whiteside, he gets half.
Whiteside gets half an apple.
He's the rookie. He has to pick up everybody's bags and everything else, so he only gets half an apple.
Yeah, him and Napier split one.
Well, they did talk about that. I saw that. I don't know if you saw that piece by ESPN's Michael Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
about Whiteside today, that they're, even though he's obviously not a rookie because he's, you know, spent his first couple of years.
Yeah, they still call him Rook.
Yeah, they still call him Rook, and he still, you know, has to like bring him food and pick up their bags and everything else. So, I mean, maybe that's all part of the grounding process. Even as he's, you know, kind of a rookie in a sense, but he's always, you know, he already has played a number of years there. They're still kind of trying to keep him grounded.
That's good.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this Norris Cole thing. Kemba Walker, unfortunately. Well, unfortunately, in an NBA sense, I guess it's good for Heat fans because the Charlotte Hornets were in the playoff race. We were kind of battling them, but he's out for the season, it looks like, or for 6 to 8 weeks, I should say. What kind of surgery was it? I'm looking at it now.
Knee?
Yeah, something like that.
What, was it Achilles? No. No, that was Brian.
I just keep seeing injury, so he got hurt. And now the Hornets are looking at trading for either Raymond Sessions from the Kings or Norris Cole from the Heat, obviously, which would be huge because Heat fans have basically ran Norris Cole out of town. Norris Cole didn't play Sunday against the Bulls at all. He was a DNP. Right. No illness that we knew of. They didn't report anything. I believe he was active, and he just didn't play. He just didn't come off the bench. So just tweeted something. Yep. So, so David and I, before we got onto the podcast, played with a little bit of a trade machine thing, and we came up with an idea of trading Josh McRoberts and Norris Cole for Marvin Williams and a future draft pick. Right? That's kind of intriguing. I don't know. If you're the Heat, you'd have to be saying, okay, we wanted McRoberts as that tandem with Bosch. And we signed him for 4 years. It was going to be those elbow guys. Are we ready to move on from that because we have Hassan Whiteside and moving Bosch to power forward? Does that allow us the space to, or the leeway to get rid of McRoberts? I don't know if it does, because I think McRoberts is really good as a four coming off the bench, even in that scenario. There's still like that versatility, that glue thing that he has that could be very valuable. But
they didn't sign into that kind of money to be a bench guy, though.
Well, yeah, he's making $5 million a year, but it's
the starting lineup that they'd already projected for the beginning of the season was him starting at power forward with Chris Bosh at center. But now with Whiteside's emergence, that no longer is the case. So, you know, you want to have somebody who feels more comfortable being a backup. I don't know. I mean, I think Marvin Williams' contract is actually worth more.
Yes.
So that, you know, that would change that impact overall.
But for half the span of the McRoberts contract. So if you trade McRoberts and Cole, right, now McRoberts rejoins Charlotte, which they wanted him back in the first place. He just decided to sign in Miami. And you get rid of Norris Cole and give them Norris Cole for a year, because apparently they want Norris Cole. You're taking back Marvin Williams, and I don't know what you can get. Can you get – so the we owe the Hornets our 2019 second-round pick from that Napier deal, that draft night trade. I don't know if it's even like, if you just get your 2019 second round pick back, that's not really a get at all. You'd probably be asking for a first round pick in this year's draft or next year's draft, probably something protected, obviously, especially because the Hornets lost arguably their best player. Al Jefferson's their best player, but whatever. Can you get a protected first round pick in these next couple of years? That might be enough to say, okay, we'll let McRoberts go. Norris Cole, he's not even playing for us anymore, or whatever. If you want him, take him. And then you're getting Marvin Williams, who actually would fit really nicely with what the Heat do. He can come off the bench as a stretch four, maybe play a little small forward, and just kind of help out and give this team some depth. I mean, he's 28 years old, averaging 6.5 points per game, 4.5 rebounds per game this season. Really not playing much. He's playing about, like, what, 10 minutes a game, I think? Let me look that up. No, he's playing more than that. He's playing 24 minutes a game. But could be a nice little fit, right? Well, what do you think about that deal? Would you pull the trigger on that? I know we played GM last week. I don't know. I like the idea of McRoberts coming off the bench. I know he's not being paid like a bench guy. But, I mean, you look at what the Spurs do with Boris Diaw coming off the bench. I mean, there's a potential crunch time lineup with McRoberts and Bosch in there, or even, you know, and if Whiteside can't go, or if Whiteside's in foul trouble, or whatever it might be.
I don't make the move. I mean, I still, I don't want to give up on the McRoberts experiment. I think it's, you bring up a good point, because then, you know, what you could do is you could, if you take Whiteside out, you know, let's say he starts next season, McRoberts is fully healthy, whatever, and he's ready and able to come off the bench. You could kind of shift the lineup a little bit, have Bosch at center when you take Wade out. You know, hopefully we'll have Deng next season as well, so that's still a quality small forward. I mean, you could do a lot of things.
Yeah,
he
I like the versatility. A lot of versatility.
I mean, I know he's never been used as a small forward. He's probably not quick enough to do so, but I think he still gives you some potential there. I mean, it's you'd have to get a really good, solid, impactful player this season in order for me to want to consider trading away McRoberts, just because I think he still has an added versatility and dimension to him that we didn't get a chance to see this year. So I don't want to give up on that just yet.
But Marvin Williams does allow for a little bit of that. He's not quite the Swiss Army knife that McRoberts is, but he will give you a quality power forward and on a 2-year contract, a tradable contract, you'd say, on a $7 million. I mean, next year that would become a very valuable expiring deal. McRoberts is signed through 4 years, so he kind of passes that 2016 benchmark that we always talk about with Pat Riley. Now, if you're the Hornets and you really want McRoberts back, and you want a replacement point guard for the year, I get, to me, you're saying that it would have to be an impactful player coming back, but with the Heat not having the draft picks that they have, no assets, you're getting a valuable expiring contract in return in Marvin Williams, and then you're getting, if it's a really loosely protected pick, like if it's only top 5 protected, which still gives you a lottery shot, or even, you know, a top 7 protected or something like that, then I think you got to consider doing it, right? Like, because if the Hornets miss the playoffs and you can still kind of get in that top 14-ish, that might be worth it for Josh McRoberts, and especially if you don't know if he's ever going to play a full season for you. I don't know. I think if you can get a nice pick for it in return for either this year or the year after, I think that might be worth it.
I'm hearing Gary Neal is another possibility as well.
Oh, they have Gary Neal. Yeah, so now we're not even talking about McRoberts, right? So now let's not put McRoberts in there. Play more trade machine stuff. Norris Cole for Gary Neal? Does that work?
I think it doesn't work, and I think you have to include a player like Hamilton or something like that in order to make it happen.
That would be fine, I think. The Heat would pull the trigger on that.
I think so. And didn't he actually play in Charlotte as well when he was kind of wavering in between? I mean, it was last year's Bobcats team, but I think he spent some time with the Bobcats when he was in and out of the D-League, so...
Yeah.
There's some familiarity there, so it kind of makes sense, actually. I think that's the deal that winds up getting done, if anything.
Yeah, that makes sense for Gary Neal. That would give, well, I guess they could play Gerald. They could play Gerald. Well, for us, Gary Neal would be huge. I mean, I think Cole and Hamilton for Gary Neal is a slam dunk, right? You finally get a backup shooting guard, a guy. Yeah, you're right, a floor spacer. I mean, that would just work on all cylinders, but. Yeah, I guess the Hornets would do it. They play Gary Neal quite a bit. I don't know if they'd be willing to part with Gary Neal for Norris Cole. That's because in essence, that's what they're doing, right? Like, plays 22 minutes a game. He's averaging nearly 10 points a game. He's only shooting 27% from three, but he's been much better than that for his career.
Yeah, maybe they definitely can't see him as a starter, or else they wouldn't be looking to make any trades at all. So they're looking to bring somebody in who has at least some experience as a starter without committing a huge amount of like contract money worth.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, maybe if they're willing to make a move, I don't know what Ramon Sessions' deal is worth. I think he signed to a little bit longer than, I think he signed beyond the season, if I'm not mistaken, right? Didn't they just sign him in Sacramento?
Yeah. And he is on for 2 years, 2.1. So basically Cole's at 2.0 for 1 year. He's a restricted free agent. So they kind of, you know, have the ball in their court in that sense. But, yeah, it's interesting. You know, if they're willing to part with Gary Neal, that would definitely be the best trade. Other guys that match Norris Cole's contract are on that roster, kind of Noah Vonleh, Brian Roberts. Doesn't make sense that they would trade Roberts, the other point guard. They're not going to trade Vonleh for Norris Cole. Jesus, why would they do that? PJ Harrison, right? We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe the contract of Jeff Taylor or Pargo, somebody that might get just waived. You can kind of couple those guys together. Harrison would be really good, but they probably like Harrison long term more than they like Gary Neal, especially on the rookie scale contract. I don't know, man. There's a lot that can happen, and then you can always get a third team involved and just change everything. But yeah, they don't have any exceptions either. They don't have any trade exceptions. I don't know.
I don't either. We're just hearing this news right now. Yeah. It seemed like at least part of the reason why he's not playing Cole, that is, I guess, they don't want him to devalue himself any further. I mean, we've seen everything that we can out of him this season. He's had his ups. He's definitely had many more downs. I imagine that he's not even getting any kind of playing time whatsoever because, they're not going to be able to get much back for him, or nobody would be willing to make a move. And I have to be honest, I guess that Miami is willing to trade him at this point. They either don't want to re-sign him or would want to re-sign him for the absolute minimum. And I don't think that's what Cole thinks he wants, and I certainly don't think that's what Rich Paul, his agent, would want either. So I would have to say that the Norris-Cole era is probably due to end sometime soon.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. And I think Heat fans would be very happy with that. I mean, on the last Grantland Basketball Hour on ESPN, it was Zach Lowe or Bill Simmons was talking about guys that put things on the table and take things off the table, right? Bring things to the table and take things off the table. I don't know if you watched that, but I started thinking about Miami's point guard situation and why Shabazz Napier was getting some playing time. He's really raw. He doesn't really know what's going on so much, but and that's kind of a scary thing when you're playing a rookie point guard, especially for a team that wants to make the playoffs and is every game matters right now. But you think about what Norris Cole and is bringing to the table, and he's just not really bringing anything there. I mean, at least with Napier, you're getting the passing and the court vision and all and the quickness and all and the off the dribble threat
right.
that Norris Cole just frankly doesn't have. He's just not a scoring threat anymore. Cole is not necessarily. He was just kind of a solid guy. He was just not a negative, not a positive, just kind of handling the point guard situation the last few years. And this year, with the point guard position being more important, he's really just kind of, the floor has kind of fallen out from underneath him, and it just seems like he can't really get ahead in the game, and he just doesn't really know what's going on sometimes. He's not doing a good job navigating screens, and he's not doing a good job on defense, I think, because he's putting so much effort in the offense, and it's just not working. I guess this is why I think it's Napier and Chalmers right now, and Cole's just not playing, and he just doesn't bring anything to the table for the Heat. So yeah, there's some options here. What about a three-way trade? Let me just throw that out there. Raymond Sessions goes to the Heat, Norris Cole goes to the Hornets, and the Kings get something else. Can we just do that?
Sure.
All right, let's just do that.
Is that an upgrade there?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't watch enough Kings basketball, unfortunately. But
I don't think anybody does at this point.
No, I don't even know. Like, Kings fans out here barely watch them, so.
Wait, it's admitting that there are Kings fans. I didn't even know that there were that many.
I'm surprised by how many people claim to be Kings fans. People that claim to be Kings fans are really Kings fans. And then some people are just like, there's like the Sacramento thing over here. I live in the Bay Area, listeners. And there's Sacramento is about 2 hours north or so, and when they do come down here, they're really proud of their Sacramento heritage, so to speak, and they'll say, oh, I'm a Kings fan, oh, who's your favorite Kings player, and they'll say something stupid like Isaiah Thomas, and then I'm just like, all right. okay, one more. Oh, Dwayne Wade got snubbed from the, we haven't talked about the All-Star thing. Okay, that's my segue. Oh, God, we haven't talked about this.
That's good. That's quality right there.
2K rating up or down? I think we're going down a little bit right now. I got to boost
let's
up.
Let's say it stays even just because, your millions of fans out there kind of like your spontaneity, the edge at which you bring to the podcast. So nice. I think that kind of keeps you kind of even keel with your previous rating. So
I'll take your word for it. All right, so let me X out of this trade machine because I get easily distracted. So Dwayne Wade, so thanks to Justin Bieber, Dwayne Wade doesn't make the All-Star team. I hate Justin Bieber more than ever.
Who doesn't? I mean, anybody anybody listening to our podcast, if you love Justin Bieber, please let us know why. What's the appeal at this point in his career? I mean, I don't know that there was any appeal period ever, but I mean, then again, I was never a 12-year-old girl, so I don't know. Maybe there are some fans out there that think or feel differently, and I'd like to hear from them, to be honest with you.
Yeah. If you're a Justin Bieber fan that somehow came upon our podcast, please email us. Let us know what it is that you like about the Biebs.
Right? Because you think, you know, as far as like Euler circles are concerned, that the twain would never intersect, right? I mean, you would never see a Justin Bieber fan intersect with an all-you-can-eat podcast, the Heat Check podcast fan, right?
Right. But we're all over the globe, and it's just bound to get picked up by some Bieber fan. I mean, he's got 60 million followers on Twitter. I wrote a piece about Dwayne Wade in the fourth quarter, and I opened it up, and I want to talk about that. But I opened up the piece by saying, like, just introducing the idea that Dwayne Wade didn't make the All-Star team because Justin Bieber's a jackass. And I went to go look at his Twitter to see how many Twitter followers he had. He's got 60 million. And then I looked at his Twitter photo and his Twitter header, and he's just, like, shirtless hugging some other model. I'm like, if you're a girl, how is that still appealing to you? You're like, oh, this guy's a scumbag. Like, I don't know. That's how maybe girls just see him shirtless, and that's good enough.
I don't know.
It just drives me crazy. It's just whatever. I don't want this to come out of jealousy. I don't want him to feel like I'm being jealous here, but it seems like he's doing more to push people away than to embrace people lately. But he's still got...
I probably don't want to bring this up in a podcast, but is your significant other like a huge Bieber fan or something?
No, she hates him too. But she's also an adult, so she's not a 12-year-old girl either. So anyway, he tweets it out. So what I don't get is that a lot of people are saying that he tweeted out to his 60 million followers, vote for Kyle Lowry, basically, right? But he didn't even put a hashtag NBA ballot. So even people that retweeted it, it didn't count. Because I looked at the tweet and there was no hashtag NBA ballot on there. So I don't think that counts. I'm not really exactly sure, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't. And if you're a Bieber fan, chances are you might not even know who Kyle Lowry is. Or that Toronto has a basketball team. Or that basketball is even a sport.
Yeah.
Or that sports exist. Or that there's anything outside of your computer, even remotely. So, to do that, and he didn't tweet a link to the NBA.com voting thing. So I don't like a lot. Bieber's getting a lot of credit for getting Lowry into the All-Star game. I don't know how many votes he actually created for Lowry, and I don't know. I think it was more of their broadcaster saying hashtag, and like, did they get a vote every time he said hashtag NBA ballot Kyle Lowry?
I don't think so. But to their credit, though, these fans can be pretty resourceful. I don't know if you've seen some of the quality of the signage that they put together for Bieber concerts, but I mean, these are dedicated acolytes. You know, they really love themselves some Biebs, and maybe they went through the process of realizing, oh, Kyle Lowry is something or someone that's important to Justin Bieber. I have to figure out what I can to make him happy, and maybe he'll come and sweep me off my feet and take me out of this, you know, sophomore year in high school misery, and finally whisk me away to a special little paradise up north in Toronto or whatever. But the point being,
Kyle Lowry won by almost 100. He reclaimed like 200,000 votes, right? Because he was 100,000 back, and then he ended up winning by 100,000.
Are you pissed off that he snubbed Dwayne Wade because of how he did it with the possible influence of Justin Bieber, or just the snubbing itself? Do you think he's not a deserving All-Star?
No, I believe he is a deserving All-Star and more deserving than Dwayne Wade. He played more games.
Really?
He played more games. He really helps he is the Raptors' offense. Without him, he's like the head on the snake. They have a lot of talent, but it comes apart. We've seen it when he doesn't play. He's really great when you watch him in person, and I don't know. I just I wouldn't have been upset. Like, if I as an objective NBA fan, if Wade got the start or if Lowry got the start, I would have been fine with either one. So it's not that it's not that he's more deserving than Wade, but he's not deserving.
I agree. I think it's fine. I don't think it's a legacy vote for Wade either, though, which is what a lot of people are saying. I know the TNT broadcast.
You mean if Wade gets in on the coach's vote?
Or if he had gotten voted in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could make a case for him. And I think that fans that know aren't just saying, oh, let me vote for the guy that I'm familiar with, this Wade guy in Miami. I think you could look at his numbers, his impact. Yeah, he's missed games, but when he's played, and I know that's a caveat that a lot of players don't want to hear, but, you know, when he's played, he's been very effective. And so you can't make a strong argument that Wade deserves to be in the All-Star game. Having said that, I don't feel bad about it. A lot of Heat fans are pretty angry about the whole thing. And I think, moreover, they're convinced that Wade will be chosen as a reserve. And that I have a problem with, because I don't necessarily see it that way. I think there are other options in the Eastern Conference, and I don't think Wade gets selected as a reserve. And I don't have a problem with him not getting selected altogether. I think, you know, the All-Star game is a joke, obviously. You know, I don't see any point really getting... You know, we've seen this in the NFL, where the Pro Bowl has become a mockery of what it once was, if it was anything significant. You know, it's one thing when it's the 1960s and you've got players making as little money as they did, and they were, you know, looking for whatever endorsements from their local car dealerships, because it was either that or get a job at that car dealership. You know, this isn't right. The same thing where they're making a paycheck off of the All-Star game appearance. These guys make millions of dollars. They don't need to be there. We've seen what happens. It's a final score of 152 to 149 or something like that. No defense is getting played. It's a lot of fun. But even now, I think the fans are starting to get a little bit turned off by it. You know, it doesn't have the same kind of allure as it did in years past. And I don't know, for a player like Wade, who's been battling injury, who's been, you know, chosen a number of times and deservedly so, I frankly do not care if he gets chosen to the All-Star game.
You know what? I don't think he cares either.
Right?
Yeah, I don't think he cares either. This is something... But the All-Star game is what? It's for the fans. It's always been for the fans. Well, you know, it's yeah, it's always been for the fans. There was an incentive for the players to make it, but it was never really for the players, right? It was always just for the fans. That's why they have a dunk contest, you know? It's why they have a three-point shooting contest, so...
No, I've read about it. It's not that case at all. It was actually... A chance for them to make extra money, the owners. And we're talking about when it was.
Oh, that's what I mean. That's what it's okay. So I should clarify. It's for the fans to spend more money for the owners. That's what I should clarify that. Okay. It was meant for the fans.
Right. It was meant for the. Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying. Yes. It is an important caveat, though. I mean, the whole idea of why come up with an All-Star game in the first place was because when it was a limited league with just 8 teams, they wanted to draw whatever extra money they possibly could, and so that's why they came up with this idea. And then the players were into it because, again, they were making a little extra money. And probably the winning team probably got like a $50 or $100 bonus or something like that. You know, we're talking about like numbers that mean so insignificantly in today's day and age. And now it's just changed to this whole, you know, All-Star weekend. It's become like this All-Star week and everything else.
And it's fun, but and it's cool. But,
I think that's... You covered the whole spectacle of it for, you know, the four-day period in New Orleans, so...
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was awesome. And they do a really good job. The NBA does an awesome job. And if the NFL can figure out how to make it a destination, because NBA players like going, you know, it's not... You don't go to an All-Star game. Like, in the Pro Bowl, they're like, yeah, I don't want to go. Even when it was in Hawaii, they were like, no, I've been to Hawaii. I've already been to 15 Pro Bowls. I'm good. Like, in the NBA, they always go every year because it's an... The NBA puts on a really good party, basically.
But doesn't it have a lot to do with the fact that football is, you know, incredibly violent and taxing as it is on the body?
Yeah.
That they do this at the end of the season, practically.
Well, exactly. Well, they played the Pro Bowl yesterday. I had no idea. I was accidentally on ESPN, and I was like, "What the hell is this?" Oh, it's the Pro Bowl. It's in Phoenix this year. So I guess they have it where the Super Bowl is now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, and they don't even wear. They were wearing orange and gray, and they don't even wear the blue and the reds now. I'm like, what is even happening right now? I don't even know.
Right.
So whatever. Anyway, the point is that's why the fans are more upset than I think. Media people are, or even Dwayne Wade is probably, like, it's just like the fans want to see their player in the All-Star game. That's fine. The fans should be upset. Then again, the fans, I didn't really see a lot of support, you know, on Twitter and on Facebook and just in general, like you usually see for these things. Like Toronto really came out and supported Kyle Lowry. They wanted him in there. And I guess maybe it was just a lazy thing, just lackadaisical, like, oh, wait, he always makes it. He's always the NBA starter in the Eastern Conference. Like, he'll just make it. And then they just and he was winning. He was winning in the votes, and they just, and that was it. And I guess he just never had that final push, and that's why Lowry got the bump, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, Bosch didn't make it either. So now you have the question that, okay, so the are the coaches going to vote in two Heat players when the Heat are below 500? And basically disappointing this season.
Yeah, I don't see that they do. And my, I actually think that Bosch is more deserving of the All-Star selection than Wade.
I agree. He did miss a handful of games, too. He missed a big chunk of games, but... yeah, for what he's doing, and he's played two different positions this season.
Yeah.
I think that has to come in into play. Either way, I think one of them makes it. I think Dwayne Wade makes it, and Chris Bosh gets left out, unfortunately.
Okay.
That's what I think. Not that's not what I believe should happen, but that's what I think happens. I think there's a lot of there is a lot of competition at guard, though. Bradley Beal, yeah. Kyrie Irving, we're dealing with those guys, but.
Well, Walker's injury changes that, but he was a potential All-Star selection.
Yeah, I don't think he would have made it, but yeah, he was potentially there. All right, well, Dwayne Wade is the top scorer in the fourth quarter in the NBA. That has to count for something, right?
Yeah. I'll let you set this up because it's an excellent piece. If you haven't read it and you're still listening to us at this point, it's definitely worth reading. And some great visuals there and a lot of statistical evidence to show what West will be talking about right now.
Well, and there's a GIF GIF in there.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, however we say that. So, no, this is a simple post. You know, the Miami Heat broadcast crew mentioned that during the Bulls game that Wade was the top scorer in the fourth quarter, something I hadn't realized, and turns out he is. He's averaging 7.1 points per game in the fourth quarter, and he's shooting at nearly a 49% clip, and that's the best in the NBA in terms of points. You know, the top 10 is Carmelo Anthony, Damian Lillard, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Swaggy P, Kevin Durant, Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. So all those guys you'd kind of expect to be there are in there, right? And so, I mean, I was kind of surprised Steph Curry is not in there, but I guess because Klay Thompson's also amazing that I guess they just share the fourth quarter. But there is some graphics over here on allyoucanheat.com. It just shows basically how Wade likes to go left. And breaks down what he's specifically doing in the fourth quarter. And it's writing this piece, and the last couple of times I've been seeing Dwayne Wade, I've been wanting to write a Dwayne Wade piece for a while because I've kind of rediscovered my appreciation for Wade. Not saying it ever left, but I've been watching him, I guess, more intently than I have. And he really is, and just full disclosure, it really started when I looked up his free throw numbers and that he was shooting way below his norm in free throws. I mean, like, two free throws a game kind of stuff, just, like, in multiple games, like, not getting to the line as much as you'd expect Dwayne Wade to. And I started, well, why is that? And he's not driving to the rim like he used to. Remember Dwayne Wade, like, always just going right to the rim, just Russell Westbrook style, just right to the rim all the time. And now it's more post moves and setting up his shots and feeling out his defender, ISO situation type stuff. Quite frankly, stuff that we saw from LeBron last season, and Wade's kind of picked up that post game, and he's been that LeBron type guy for the Heat now. And you just look at the moves that he has in the post, and he can go over either shoulder. He's got the step back. He could still dribble around you. He's still got the dribble moves and the crossovers. He does a great job of head faking. And basically, what all this comes down to is he's built up this whole bag of tricks that he has now. That he can throw at you just from that left block that he likes to be in. And he will just feel you out. If you're a defender, he'll feel you out, and he'll just go to any one of his some odd tricks that he can pull on you, and he's going to score. And if you're a defender, that has got to be terrifying because you have no idea if he's going to try to dribble by you, if he's going to go up with a step-back jumper, which he's perfected at this point in his career, or if he's gonna put his back on you, and if he puts his back on you, which shoulder he's gonna go on. Well, he prefers to go over the right shoulder, but he can still go left, and if you cheat up and press against that right shoulder, we've seen multiple times this season, he'll just spin around you, use your weight against you, you'll go fly in the wrong direction, and he'll just go right to the rim for a wide open layup. So he's really just perfected that post game, and I feel like we don't talk about that enough because he's got every move in the that exists almost. And I just wanted to point that out. I thought, you know, that's why he should be an all-star. So, to tie everything together.
Yeah, well, now you're kind of changing your tune there, but clearly you've rediscovered your love of Dwayne Wade there, or your appreciation
for him. I mean, it's just, like, against the Bulls, everything was going down, right? Like, he just hit jumper after jumper. And that's not to say, like, a lot of the fourth quarter woes for Miami has been due to Wade just going hero ball, basically. Yep. So I don't want to say that, and I even mentioned that in the piece, for better or for worse, this is what's happening. He's taking nearly six shots per game in the fourth quarter. That's a lot. That's a lot. So, yeah, it's has its problems. I think the Heat's offense is best when they try to do some of this pick-and-roll stuff. And this is what they've been doing the last couple games. They'll run pick-and-rolls with Luol Deng and Mario Chalmers and multiple sets, you know, 5-1s, 3-2s, just everything that you can. They're doing it in multiple ways, which is great. And then that Wade post-up thing, that ISO thing, is that second option. Okay, the pick and roll just got blown up. We can't do it. Let's give it to Wade in the post because there's 15 seconds on the shot clock. And so that's fine. I don't like when they dribble it down the court and Chalmers just entry passes it to Wade on that low block and everybody just stands there, which is the worst kind of offense. But so everything in moderation, right? But when he is in the post, I mean, he's masterful. He's like an artist in there. It's great. Well, I didn't use artist in the post. I said boxer, but whatever. Artist, boxer, what's the difference?
Quite a bit. I don't know what galleries you've been to, but it sounds like you think
I'm usually pretty... I leave with a black eye. Is that not what I stopped going a couple years ago?
I normally leave with wine and cheese in my pockets. You know, the wine gets a little hard to carry, but you know, you can get very creative. That what everybody does when they go to these gallery things, they kind of just like get as much cheese and wine as possible.
Yeah, you just stuff your face, and then you're like, oh yeah, there's art here.
I don't even notice sometimes. It could be an empty gallery.
Well, I do that when I go to the open houses, you know, for real estate things. I'll just, cool, they put a nice spread out here, and then, is this house for sale? And whatever, I'm good. I got a place.
Should we look ahead to the week?
Cereal or not cereal? I think so.
Milk and cereal.
Cereal, cereal.
So three games this coming week. Tuesday versus Milwaukee. Friday, nice long break there, versus Dallas. Sunday in Boston. The Bucks are... cereal? I don't know. They're a tough one.
It's weird because with the injuries, you wonder where they fit.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Injuries make everybody a lot less cereal. I look at Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
Did I nail that?
Nice. Yeah, you did.
Great. And he's very cereal.
But with like a little underlying vein of not cerealness in that, you know, I think you could chalk it up to kind of what you call a joie de vivre, right? I mean, a joy for life there. And maybe it's the kind of European attitude that he has. But, you know, he seems very appreciative for all the little things that he has. And it kind of comes across as this, like, childlike innocence and everything else. It's kind of refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he's necessarily kind of a... He's not a serial guy necessarily in that he's not like, you know, Lance Stevenson. You know, he's not crazy or wild or anything like that. But I think maybe you're right in that he's cereal.
There's different flavors of cereal, though, David.
You're right. Yeah, he just loves cereal, probably. Yeah, he probably, like, he even loves the variety of it. And he probably takes the analysis of cereal very seriously, you know?
And he's happy, and he's appreciative that we call him cereal.
I would think so. I would think so. And if he wasn't, then he would, you know, argue that, well, maybe I can see your point, and, you know, it gives me a new perspective on things. I like the kid.
That Eurostep is cereal. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that thing is dirty is what it is.
It's dirty cereal. Dirty cereal.
Murderous cereal, too. I mean, Chris Bosh was on the receiving end of a ridiculous dunk there. I mean, I don't even want to bring that one up, although I just did.
It's kind of late.
Good to know that at least those two games are, the next two games are at home, Milwaukee mm-hmm. on Tuesday and Dallas, because with the big nor'easter that's taking place, a lot of games have likely to get canceled in the next few days, and that would have been one of them, I think, in Milwaukee.
But... Well, I've never flown from Milwaukee to Florida, but I'm assuming you don't really have to go through that, right? Or either if you do, usually, I guess you can. There's alternate routes. I don't know. There's a whole weird airspace thing.
I've never been to Milwaukee. I mean, if I wasn't an NBA fan, I'd swear it was a rumor of some kind. I don't know anything about it.
You know what? I know most of my geography, and this is probably true for you too, is based on sports.
Ooh, yeah.
I've thought about, like, if it wasn't for sports, I'd literally have no idea that, I probably wouldn't even be able to name all 50 states. Like, I wouldn't.
Wait, you're a big Alaskan team fan there?
The only reason I know Alaska is everybody knows Alaska. It's that place that's freaking cold. But, you know, if like, because everybody says, oh, the 48 continental states, and you're like, oh, what are the other ones? Alaska and Hawaii, those lame guys. I'm like, oh, right. But yeah, like Milwaukee, Wisconsin, like, I wouldn't know Wisconsin existed. Like, why would I?
And there goes our sponsorship from the Greater Tourism Board of Wisconsin.
Well, you know what? I take that back, because I watched that 70s show as a kid. And that was based in Milwaukee-ish or something.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I was a big That 70s Show fan, David. But, like, Cleveland? Sorry. Wouldn't know Cleveland was in Ohio.
What, that was the Drew Carey Show? Is that what you're going to tell me?
No, because they have sports there. I don't know. But, I don't know. I just, like, especially cities. I don't know. I'm getting on to, but San Antonio is the perfect one. If it wasn't for the Spurs, I'd have no idea until I was in history class that San Antonio was still around.
Of your American history courses, like, these cities just kind of like died after they were involved in whatever major American battle they were.
They like, served their purpose. That was it. Like, oh, yeah. you served your historical purpose. Now you're dead.
So Texas could have been annexed back in by Mexico for all you knew, right? Until you realized, wait a minute, the Spurs still play. They're American. Clearly, we won the Alamo. So you were totally sleeping during that major lesson in American history.
For most major lessons in American history, I was sleeping.
You know, Concord and Lexington, still cities in the United States after the Revolutionary War.
Just no way. Well, they need some basketball teams over there.
I think they have some.
Well, NBA teams.
Oh, that's not going to happen. Sorry.
Okay. Well, Dallas is the rematch from earlier in the year, that great game, that great win that we had against Dallas. We're a completely different team now.
Signature win for the season and a great matchup. Tyson Chandler and Hassan Whiteside, right? I mean, that's going to be a key one. And I mentioned this earlier, Dirk Nowitzki versus Chris Bosh at the power forward position.
Love it.
Something we haven't seen in the first 4 years of his stay in Miami, right? So, I mean, this is going to be really exciting. Well, maybe actually finals.
In the finals we saw that. And that was actually a good matchup, right? I mean, Dirk had an historically great finals. Yeah, I think that's gonna be terrific. And Bosh has learned a lot. Bosh is a different player than he was that first year. So, he's expanded his range. He's great on defense and everything. So that's gonna be a lot of fun. The Mavericks are serial. I'm just putting it out there.
Rajon Rondo, Dirk Nowitzki, serial. Yeah. Chandler Parsons, fat free serial. But yeah, absolutely.
Jim Carrey coaching.
Do you actually see the comparison? I mean, I guess everybody's talked about it, but do you actually look at him and say, oh, he kind of does look like Jim Carrey, right?
Yeah, I mean, I picked up on it before I heard anybody else, and I was like, is this really a thing? And of course, I Googled it, because that's what you do. And everybody else had made that comparison already, so I wasn't clever, but I picked it out myself. So yeah, I think it's very, very real. Do you? You don't think so?
Yeah, I mean, I know both of them so clearly that I guess there's some similarities there, but I don't know. I used to think Robert Horry looked a little bit like, what's his name? The actor. Kevin Smith. What's his name? Will Smith. How could I forget Will Smith?
Oh, really?
Robert Horry looked like Will Smith at one point. That was like a big comparison.
When he was skinny?
Yeah.
Before he put on all that weight?
Before he was Big Shot Rob, or, you know, Big Buffet Rob, or whatever. The Boris Diaw effect in San Antonio. When he started.
Have you seen Boris Diaw lately? Have you watched the Spurs game?
I haven't. Is he bigger?
No, he's just gray. Well, yes, but he's gray.
Oh,
like,
his hair.
Yeah, but he's got wrinkles on his face. I don't know what happened between last season's finals win and whatever the hell he did in the offseason, because it sure as hell wasn't yoga. I don't know what he did, but he aged 4 years in a summer. He looks bad. And he's not playing as well either, so. He went through some time machine crap or something. But either way, the Mavericks are serial. I think that's an absolute fact. And this is the first, so they have Rondo. We didn't play them with Rondo. We have Whiteside, Bosch at power forward, some different interesting guard changes. Yeah, it's going to be...
They actually match up really well, right? I mean, except for the, I guess the point guard position kind of is where we're weakest, right? But Chalmers and Rondo, Wade and Ellis...
Well, at least Chalmers has that familiarity, so I hope that would count for something.
Yeah.
You know, at least in terms of defending them. When it comes down, and, you know, Rondo, you think about, like, if Rondo's going to be defending Chalmers, it's like, Rondo's a really, really great on-ball defender when he's engaged. That's almost wasted when you're defending Miami's point guards. It's like, yeah, go be a really awesome on-ball defender over there. That's fine. Just do that over there. It's fine. Because you could be an average one and still get the same effect out of it.
So if they shade off of, you know, Chalmers...
That's what you wonder, right? If they put Monte Ellis on whoever our point guard might be.
Yeah.
So, but typically I haven't seen much of that from Rondo. They usually... But it's a completely different coach, but usually kind of just sticks in that point guard area. But... Let's talk about his old team, is Boston. So, Boston, thought they started the season off as serial. I think they're less serial. I don't think they're not serial.
They traded away everybody. They're clearly playing to the future.
They're very, for a team that has nothing to play for this year, they're playing for everything, basically, right? They're playing for their future. They're playing for their entire focus is to tank. You just can't be serial and tank. That's like one of the most engaged, focused things you can do in the NBA is to tank.
Yeah, and it's a different tanking also. And like, I mean, I've seen Philadelphia for a few games, and they're much more committed. They feel like, to me anyway, and I could be wrong, I'm not a diehard Sixers fan, obviously, but you kind of see them really trying to win games, and they can, you know. I mean, they've won enough or whatever. They've surpassed the Knicks as far as the worst record in the league. But you know, they're giving their effort there. So, but the Celtics, I don't know. I mean, and they're still in.
You know, like Brad Stevens is like coaching his butt off, but I feel like he's really trying on the coaching end. And I've heard some things. Like, Boston fans are a little worried that if it doesn't get back, if the Celtics don't start winning and picking up, like, assets and, like, there's a plan in place, they're worried about him going back to college.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking right now, they're 15-27. I mean, they're not that far removed from an eighth seed in the Eastern.
Well, because they were, they were right up there before they made all those trades, before they got rid of Green and Rondo. They were kind of on the cusp, and I think they're just going to lose a bunch of games, though. They're going to fall. They're not going to win 25 games this season, you know? They're not going to win 10 more games this year.
Yeah, that'll take a lot of the cereal out of the team, that's for sure.
Yeah, empty bowl. Just they're an empty bowl right now. They traded away all their cereal.
It's the void. It stares back at you.
Brad Stevens is just sitting at his counter, hovering over an empty bowl of cereal, thinking, what have I done? I had a good bowl of cereal at Butler.
Yeah, he misses, what's his name from Utah?
Oh, Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
It's my boy. It's my boy. Right. Max contract, Gordon Hayward.
How do we look at the next three games? Three wins, three losses, somewhere in between?
Three wins, as long as Hassan Whiteside's playing.
Yeah. The same way, and you know, it's weird. We've never really we've been in agreement for most of the time. I see us being able to pull out three straight wins. That would be great.
I agree, and I think you know, Pat Riley said that this team will go on a 7-8 game streak, and everybody will feel fine, and we'll be right back where we need to be. I think this team has got the momentum that they need, and you know what? It's more than just Hassan Whiteside. It's the way the ball is moving. When Whiteside's in there, and even when Chris Anderson was in there, when we had that combination, that ball is moving. And I already mentioned it, all the different screen and rolls that they're doing, and just the players are moving. We keep calling it ball movement. The key is the player movement, right? They're moving. They're doing things. There seems to be a plan. Spoelstra's calling plays, finally. Like, it seems like there's stuff going on, and that, to me, is as reassuring as this whole Hassan sanity thing is. And those two combined, yeah, I think we're due for a win streak, and I think this is it. I think this is the perfect time. And we've already beaten Dallas this year, so there's that feel, there's that confidence. Milwaukee's ain't no thing. Boston's a rollover opponent, hopefully. And the good thing is that hardest game, Dallas, we have a three-day break, you know, and it's for Friday night. So in order to prepare for them. So hopefully it all works out. So hopefully we're not too overconfident and we end up losing three and then we'll just feel awful. But
I don't think that's the case. Not with us anyway, I think.
No, we're pretty even level. Yeah, pretty even keel in our emotions. So especially when it comes to voicing them on a podcast platform.
We don't want to get called out later on.
And I will say this about Pat Riley. He knew something about Hassan Whiteside, right? That's why I signed him to a 2-year deal.
You think so? I mean,
why else? He didn't have to. Unless Whiteside's got a freaking shot blocking agent or whatever. Like, unless that agent's just terrific, why would you sign him to a 2-year deal?
That's an interesting question, man.
Because he knew something. Because, like, he could have signed him to a 1-year deal. And then you're able to waive him pretty easily, right? And I guess still 2 years you can, like, for that contract, you can still waive him pretty easily. But, again, there's no reason, I thought, to sign him to a 2-year deal. And then just, a month later, you could have signed Ken Burch to a 10-day contract. So if there was an immediacy there to get Whiteside. And also something, like, a reason to give him 2 years instead of just one. Like, I feel like Pat Riley, there's no way Pat Riley knew that Whiteside was this good, right? Because he would have told there would have been no Sioux Falls Skyforce thing. He would have been playing right away. But he knew that he was something, right? Why sign him to a 2-year deal?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
It seems so odd that he would have, had this kind of vision. But maybe you're right. Maybe it makes absolute sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he had to know something. All right. Well, good on you, David. Good job.
Thank you so much.
Your 2K rating, I think, has improved. I just looked it up. Yeah, I looked it up on 2K15. You're up to a notch right below Hassan Whiteside, so I think by next podcast we'll be able to put you over the hump.
That's all I want, man. That's all I'm interested in at this point, my career.
That's what you're in the game for. We'll get you that big contract in a couple of years.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And I won't forget all the little people that brought it, that helped me get here along the way. I mean, I'm going to get cocky and lazy and probably put on 80 pounds, but you know what?
You deserve it, damn it.
People. Yeah, you're damn right I did.
All right.
Good talking to you.
Thanks for listening to The Heat Check. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Follow us on SoundCloud, and then check out my writing and check out David's writing at allyoucanheat.com. See you next time.